May it please the Court, I am Todd Sarver, appearing on behalf of Roughneck Concrete Sawing and Drilling Company, the appellant in this case. There are two cases before this Court. There's a complaint to enforce a national plan arbitration award, and there is a complaint to vacate a local joint arbitration board award. The district court below dismissed both of these cases under Rule 12b-6 and indeed dismissed the complaint to enforce sua sponte and without any stated rationale. Respectfully, Roughneck requests that both of these cases be reversed in their entirety. There are two overarching issues that Roughneck would like to address. First, the complaint to enforce the National Plan Award. Nobody challenged the National Plan Award arbitration award.
And well, is there any evidence in the record that the JAB had notice of the National Plan's July 21st order dismissing the JAB's hearing?
Well, Your Honor, the complaint alleges that, in fact, the JAB did have notice, and this is a, again, Rule 12b-6
right.
motion, so that has to be credited. They did, in fact, have notice, and as a result of that, it's inappropriate to dismiss.
Roughneck gave official notice to JAB that it objected to its authority to resolve the dispute. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the initial objection to the JAB's authority was the July 16th notice of job impediment. That notice of job impediment, which was sent to the National Plan, copied multiple individuals, including the secretary of the JAB, Mr. Kevin Sherlock. And that notice of job impediment identified the issue as being a work jurisdictional issue, identified that the JAB should not be deciding that work jurisdictional issue, and requesting that the JAB hearing be canceled. So that July 16th notice gave notice to the JAB of a dispute. Roughneck then appeared before the National Plan Award and obtained a decision dismissing that.
So the question is, who was that decision communicated to? Mm-hmm. Greenberg's decision.
The National Plan decision was communicated directly to the
Plumbers. By whom? Mm-hmm.
By the administrator, to the Plumbers International.
Administrator, what?
I'm sorry, Mr. Richard Resnick, the administrator of the National Plan.
So the National Plan, you say, sent an email or something, the notice of its decision to whom?
To the UA, which is the Plumbers International, the electrical.
That's the international, but what about notice to the JAB or to the local Plumbers Union?
The administrator did not send it mm-hmm. to the JAB. They were not copied directly on that decision.
Did just the international receive it?
Yes, the international, but in the proceeding, the international appears on behalf of the local, Local 130.
In the national plan proceeding?
Correct, yes, sir.
But what about in the JAB? The international isn't involved there, is it?
No, sir.
Mm-hmm. What's surprising about it is it looks as if, which I guess infuriated the JAB, is that they proceed with their decision without knowing that the National Plan has told them that they don't have jurisdiction. Isn't that very strange?
Well, and again, they did not receive notice directly from the administrator.
Well, did they receive notice indirectly? Did anyone connected with the JAB know that the previous night, was it?
Yes, sir.
Greenberg had issued this decision.
Yes, sir. Two parties knew. Number one, the funds who were prosecuting the JAB hearing were copied by the plan administrator the night before. So presumably, there's nothing in that they haven't challenged that factual issue that they received that notice.
So the funds knew?
And appeared before the JAB and either did not inform the JAB of the National Plan Award, or alternatively did inform them, and the JAB acted regardless. Likewise, the UA, the international, I think it's in Exhibit W to the complaint to enforce, indicates that it did, in fact, upon arriving that morning, the July 22nd, fax a copy of the decision to its local 130. So local 130 and the funds both had notice the day of the hearing, and indeed the funds the day before the hearing, that in fact that case had been dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
So in view of that, because no one, again, challenged the national plan award within the 90-day period. This circuit has held that an arbitration award that is not sought to vacate within 90 days must be enforced. Because no one here challenged that decision, the national plan award must be enforced. And if the national plan award is enforced, frankly, regardless of what happens with the JAB decision, the National Plan Award prevails because it's from a superior body. There's an entire mechanism out there that the construction industry has identified as being the appropriate course where something is identified as a jurisdictional work issue. The only basis or conceivable basis that the district court didn't enforce the National Plan Award, and again, it's hard to tell because there was no stated rationale with respect to its dismissal of the complaint to enforce, is that the judge inferred that there was a waiver of Roughneck's right to challenge the JAB. The judge's rationale, however, on that collapses, frankly, under its own weight. The judge concludes that waiver occurred at the moment Roughneck agreed to arbitrate the jurisdictional issue before the JAB. There is not a single case in this circuit that supports a conclusion based on that act. Voluntary and unreserved has been found to mean that the objecting party has either substantially participated in the merits of a proceeding before the arbitrator or waited until it's gotten an adverse decision before it objects. And here, Roughneck did not do that.
Roughneck initially involuntarily invoked JAB's authority, right? And then asked for two requests for continuance to prepare for the JAB hearing.
Yes, Your Honor.
And one appearance before the JAB, Roughneck protested the authority of JAB by not attending its scheduled hearing, right? But just never directly informed JAB it was challenging the authority.
It directly informed the JAB that it was challenging its authority when it filed the notice of job impediment, and the secretary of the JAB, Kevin Sherlock, was copied on that submission to the national plan. The waiver that the court infers, and to your point, again, there is no case cited by the district court or by the appellees that have found waiver in circumstances where a party agrees to arbitrate. Indeed, the DWL case, which was recently decided in the Northern District, the objecting contractor agreed to arbitrate, agreed to the arbitrator, agreed to the format in which the arbitration would take place, and then objected and was found not to have waived.
Well, aren't you arguing really that you were punished too severely for your bobble?
I'm not sure.
Well, you shouldn't have invoked the JAB, right? So you discover later you've made a mistake. This really belongs elsewhere. So you tried to correct your mistake. So why isn't your argument really that the punishment for your crime of having mistaken the agency to complain to was excessive? It didn't cause any harm to the other party, did it? Or maybe some extra attorney's fees or something?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, yes, there was an initial mistake
You made a mistake.
But the correcting...
You corrected, and maybe in correcting it, you imposed some harms on the plumbers. But presumably, I don't know, they're not asking for attorney's fees or something, are they?
Well, the JAB award, an arbitration award, concluded that Roughneck owes $3.3 million to the fringe benefit funds of the plumbers. And therein lies the problem.
You're not tracking me.
I'm sorry.
You or someone made a mistake going to the JAB, and that resulted in delay and confusion. And and an unnecessary hearing and award by the JAB. Okay, that's a mistake. But your argument must be that that mistake was not so serious that you should be stuck with an award made by a board that actually didn't have authority to make. Isn't that your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. No. That is the argument. And the court's inference, district court's inference of waiver, again, is unsupported and indeed focuses on the initial submission to the JAB as constituting waiver.
Well, but then the district court just says it doesn't appear to the court that the JAB got notice of it. Got notice of the national plan order prior to holding its hearing. You know, clearly something was faxed, but not faxed to JAB.
Not directly to the JAB,
right.
That's correct.
Which, of course, Ruffneck knew JAB, the thing had been continued a couple times, that this was a serious matter.
And
one would have thought JAB would have been faxed since they were going to make a decision that had an impact on Ruffneck.
Yes, Your Honor. But, again...
And, I mean, that's what the district court... You said the district court didn't have any rationale. I mean, that's what the district court looked at.
Well, but the district court, again, concluded waiver. The district court didn't address the complaint to enforce, which, frankly, the appellees have forfeited their right to challenge because no one filed a complaint to vacate that award within 90 days. The district court focused on the complaint to vacate, found waiver based on the submission, but then in turn, two sentences later, says at any point between the date of the submission, February 12, 2008, and the date of the hearing, July 22, 2008, Ruffneck could have objected. But in making that statement, number one, the court somewhat reverses itself on saying the waiver occurred at point A, the submission, but also ignores the fact that a notice of job impediment was filed that, again, identified the issue before the JAB and identified that this is a jurisdictional work dispute, which is more appropriately, indeed, required to be before the dispute resolution mechanism the construction industry has specifically designated to resolve these types of disputes.
Could you just take a minute to enlighten me about the underlying conflict? So, if, as I understand it, if, say, electricians were doing plumber's work, then Ruffneck would have to provide what benefits to them, even though it's a plumber's union, because the electricians were doing plumber's
work.
Yeah,
it is incumbent upon, under the process that exists, it is incumbent upon the contractor to assign the work. So if it's assigned to the electrical workers, per your example, the contractor then is responsible, assuming under their contract, to pay the designated wage rates
right.
and make the contributions to the electrical workers. If the plumbers believe at the time that work's performed, that's actually their work, they have an obligation to, under the process that, mechanism that exists, object to that work and resolve the dispute at that point. And that's through, again, the standard agreement or the joint conference board or up through the national plan. What happened here is the work was performed, you know, 100 plus thousand hours of work. The plumbers never claimed any of that work, never indicated that it was theirs. They sat idly by. And then 4 years later, their fringe benefit funds come in and say, this is plumber's work. You owe us $2 million plus in contributions. And in essence, in doing so, are evading the dispute mechanism for jurisdictional work disputes.
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
That exists.
So, but, okay, so suppose the plumbers, suppose Ruffneck lost before the JCB, and they said, you know, it should have been plumber's work. Would they would then have to pay benefits for the plumbers that they would have employed?
Yes. I mean the point of the process, it's a very expedited process at the time the work's being performed, so the decision is made within a matter of days to avoid situations in which the contractor is caught in the middle of dispute.
But suppose it had been caught in the middle like this, and then if it were ordered to pay the plumber's benefits, what about the electricians? Wouldn't it have been paying, would it pay electricians' benefits? So does it end up paying two sets of benefits for... Is that the problem?
I mean, that's the whole point of the standard agreement, the Joint Conference Board, and the National Plan, is that inevitably in these jurisdictional disputes, the contractor is stuck in the middle and can conceivably have to pay two or even three unions for the same work if it's caught in the middle. But, and this is the case in Alberici, where and in that situation, Alberici, the contractor there failed to invoke the National Plan, got caught in the middle, and ended up paying both unions. Here, Roughneck, in fact, invoked the National Plan to try to avoid that very issue.
Was it looking for the National Plan to tell it to go to the JCB, which would then decide which group of workers were entitled to the
benefits? No, I think the issue before the National Plan arbitrator, Arbitrator Greenberg, was, is this a jurisdictional dispute, in which case it can't be prosecuted before the JAB,
right?
Or is this not a dispute, in which case, yes, it can be prosecuted. The award National Plan said it is a jurisdictional work dispute.
So then what would come next with the JCB? What would the JCB decide?
That is nothing. I mean, the work's done. You can't go back and put the toothpaste in the tube. In this instance, because the fringe benefit funds are coming back years later, you know, and it can't be undone. So the answer is Roughneck has already paid multiple unions for the work performed, already contributed to their fringe benefit funds. The plumber's fringe benefit funds cannot come back now 4 years later and say, you owe us too. Also,
Roughneck had paid the electrician's retirement funds?
Yes, sir. The work that's disputed, Roughneck had already contributed to the laborers' fringe benefit funds and the electrical workers' fringe benefit funds.
Well, so is the notion that the plumbers waited too long to complain? Is that the idea?
Well, the plumbers have never claimed that work was there. So they, by virtue of sitting back and not policing the work and claiming the work at the time it was performed, have, yes, waived their right to now either come back and say that should have been our work, or alternatively what they've done.
Would their remedy have been to go to the JCB?
At the time the work was performed, yes.
They didn't do that.
They did not do that.
Went to JAB instead. Okay, well, thank you. We'll give you another minute, Mr. Sarmer.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Lozman?
May it please the Court, Counsel. John Lozman on behalf of the Plumbers Benefit Funds. In order to respond to a couple of the questions from the bench, first of all, the JAB did not have notice of the Greenberg decision. They allege, Roughneck alleges in the complaint that notice was given, but they also refer to their Exhibit V. If you look at V, there's nothing in that exhibit.
Well, if the funds knew, why didn't they tell the JAB?
Funds did not know, Your Honor.
Well, who got the facts?
There is a letter from the administrator of the National Plan dated approximately 3 or 4 days after the arbitration in which the administrator...
No fax or email or anything?
Not to the JAB, Your Honor.
No, to the funds.
There's nothing on Exhibit V that shows it was sent to anyone, Judge.
So you're saying it wasn't sent to anybody?
That's correct.
Has that been determined, or is that just an open question?
Well, they make the allegation, Your Honor, but when you look at the exhibit on which they're relying, there's nothing in that exhibit that shows it was sent to anyone.
But is this,
they allege
did the judge care about this? According to your opponent, judge just thought the waiver occurred when the Roughneck invoked the JAB initially.
The waiver absolutely occurred at that time, Your Honor.
So I
don't understand. They made a mistake, right? They made a mistake, later corrected, because it was within the jurisdiction of the National Plan. National Plan renders its decision. If there's some prejudice, cost, or something to the plumbers, fine. But there isn't any, right?
Your Honor, I disagree. I disagree with the premise of your question because...
We usually forgive harmless procedural bobbles. They happen constantly.
Well, again, Your Honor, I disagree with the premise of your question. I don't agree that this is a mistake. This is a strategic decision. Keep in mind that whenever...
derive some strategic advantage. One thing, if they go to the JAB, lose, and then they go to the national plan, I mean, that would be strategic. You know, that's taking several bites at the apple. But if they just go to the wrong place, they screw around, waste time, finally go to the right place, renders a decision, and then they continue confusing things so there isn't a notice for a while. But what's the harm? I don't understand. It's just...
Well, Your Honor, first...
procedural bobbles.
It's not...
The national plan is the organ with jurisdiction over this kind of issue. It's superior to the JAB. You know, it's higher in the union hierarchy. So to thumb your nose at the national plan, I don't see that.
Again, Your Honor, I disagree with the premise because I don't believe it was simply a bauble as the court has proposed. I believe it was a strategic choice.
What did Roughneck gain from invoking the JAB? What did they gain?
Well, I don't know what it gained, Your Honor, because it obviously chose to abandon that idea.
What's the strategy? I mean, obviously, they made a mistake, right? They made a mistake. I don't see what they gained from it.
Had they made a mistake, did they ever come to the CAB and propose to withdraw their submission? They did not, Judge.
They're not trying to get anything from the JAB. They're relying on the national plan. I don't see what... They wasted their money and maybe your money, but I don't see how they gained some tactical or strategic advantage from having gone to the wrong place first. So the $3 million seems a big punishment for something that, as far as we know, didn't cost anybody anything.
Your Honor, I think it's curious to note, what would have happened if Greenberg had not decided the issue? They would have been before the JAB the very next day. I mean, this is simply an attempt to initiate a shadow arbitration.
Greenberg, what? Who cares about that hypothesis? They got their favorable decision from Greenberg, and why isn't that the end of it?
Well, they didn't get a favorable decision from Greenberg, Your Honor, with respect to this work. Greenberg specifically stated that he was not ruling on any of the merits of the dispute regarding where this work goes.
Jurisdictional ruling, yeah. So?
So what?
So if Greenberg had decided against them, they would have been back in the JAB, right? That's what you're saying? Well, so what? He didn't decide against them. So what's the big deal?
Because once the party has submitted to arbitration before the JAB, and I think this court has made quite clear that once you submit an issue to arbitration, you cannot argue later the arbitrator does not have the authority to decide it.
I don't understand that either, because it's the national plan this union structure is hierarchical. There are locals and internationals, and the national plan is the Supreme Court of this union adjudicative system. So you'd think if it's a decision within the national plan's jurisdiction, that decision ought to be binding.
Respectfully, Your Honor, it's not a decision within the national plan's jurisdiction. First of all, I think it's dangerous to allow a party to initiate a shadow arbitration under a contract to which the funds aren't even a party, and attain an arbitration ruling or a procedural ruling, again, under a contract which the funds are not a party, in a proceeding to which the funds are not a party, and then to just ignore the Joint Arbitration Board proceeding to which Roughneck clearly and unequivocally has submitted this dispute. And if you look at the contract, the collective bargaining agreement in this case, Your Honor, it's not, in fact, a national plan issue. I mean, Roughneck argues that. They want to make it that case, but that is not, in fact, what the collective bargaining agreement in this proceeding provides.
What if a plaintiff files a case in a court that turns out not to have jurisdiction, and then it refiles it in some other court?
This is
that
not
happens all the time.
This is not an issue of judicial jurisdiction, Your Honor. I mean,
it's parallel. It's union jurisdiction, and the union has a setup which is a sort of private judiciary. It's parallel to the court system because it has this. It has a hierarchical structure.
It has a. If you might be talking about prospective work, Your Honor, maybe. I mean, there is a provision in the collective bargaining agreement that talks about disputes between unions, of which this was not, concerning prospective work, of which this was not. I think the court needs to focus on Section 3.3 of the collective bargaining agreement, which is the controlling document in this case, that specifically addresses.
You're not challenging the national plan's decision, the Greenberg decision.
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, Your Honor, we're in a difficult position because the funds are not a party to the Greenberg decision.
Mm-hmm.
Roughneck went out and initiated this shadow arbitration proceeding under a contract which the funds were not a party, involving a proceeding to which the funds were not a party, against the union and ostensibly the Plumbing Contractors Association, who were not parties to the Joint Arbitration Board proceeding. So, you know, I think that is a really dangerous path to go on if the court is going to allow a party to escape its arbitration obligations.
So your bottom line is that you had no basis to challenge the Greenberg decision.
Funds did not, Your Honor.
Why not?
I'm sorry.
Why had you no basis?
We're not a party, Your Honor. We're not a party to that proceeding. We're not a party to that decision. We're not a party to that contract.
And so you can't intervene in any way? You could not.
I'm not aware of any way we could,
Judge. Would allow, so the only place you could get a resolution was before the JAB.
That's correct, Judge. In fact, I think Roughneck went out of its way.
There's no procedure for intervention?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge. Roughneck.
I'm aware of it. I'm aware there isn't, though.
Well, I am, Judge. I mean, Roughneck went out of its way in the national plan proceeding to point out, in fact, that funds were not a party. They were not a stipulated party to that proceeding, and that's why they initiated against the union. And at the end of the day, whenever they end up as a result of the shadow arbitration proceeding, and then they don't even provide notice of that decision to the Joint Arbitration Board, I mean, they didn't even bother.
That's irrelevant, the failure to notice.
I don't agree, Your Honor.
If the national plan was authorized to do what it did, what difference would it make to notify the Joint Arbitration Board?
Your Honor, under the collective bargaining agreement in this case, the controlling agreement, this was not a national plan decision.
Which section are you relying on in your collective bargaining agreement?
Section 3.3, Your Honor.
Which says?
Section 3.3 specifically addresses arbitration with respect to audit disputes. It does not have any exceptions. It doesn't say, you know, audit arbitration except for certain issues that might fall under the national plan or certain issues that might arise on certain days of the week or anything. It just says disputes concerning compliance audits would be submitted to the Joint Arbitration Board. And that is, in fact, what the parties did. Not only the funds, but Roughneck clearly and specifically did so and even specified in its submission that it was submitting its dispute to the Joint Arbitration Board under Sections 3.3 and Section 3.5 of the CBA. I strongly disagree that there's anything in the collective bargaining agreement that provides that Roughneck can, after the fact, take some decision or take some dispute concerning work that had already been performed and take that to the national plan.
Are you saying the national plan didn't have authority to make the decision it did?
I am saying that, Your Honor. I don't necessarily...
That's not the district court's ground.
Well, I don't think that's dispositive in this case because I think the cogent point here is that regardless of what the national plan did or didn't do and regardless of what...
I don't understand. The national plan said no JAB decision. If they were authorized to do that, then there's no JAB action, right? So I don't know how you can duck this question of whether the national plan's decision was authorized.
Your Honor, that's a two-pronged response. And the first is that This court has established in numerous cases that when you don't submit an issue to an arbitration board, it's waived. It doesn't say some issues or other issues. This has come up in numerous contexts, and it's waived. So the fact that they...
A hierarchical situation. This is not the standard arbitration. Standard arbitration, there's no appellate arbitrator. So, yeah, you submit something to an arbitrator, and, you know, and that's it. But you have this national plan lurking in the background. It's a superior body. And it decided, rightly or wrongly, that JAB could not make an award in this case. Now, if you didn't like that national plan decision, you attack it. This business of intervention. Look, this is informal. They're not going to say, you obviously have an interest, and you can challenge it. Now, maybe they'd say, no, you don't have standing or something. That's very unlikely. You have the interest. So why not go to the national plan and say, look, within the 90 days or whatever, and say, look, you guys have screwed up, and we want relief. Right? You do that. You didn't do that.
Again, Your Honor, I believe that the premise of your question is wrong, frankly, because I think under the collective bargaining agreement, it's clear that audit disputes are under Section 3.3 and go to the JAB. Regardless of what they might call this, this is a dispute arising out of an audit.
That's like arguing, that's like arguing against a Supreme Court decision on the ground that they made a mistake. Right? So you're not going to obey their decision because you think it's wrong. Right? You can't do that. National plan is the hierarch. It's the Supreme Court. And if you don't like their decision, you object to it. Now, maybe if you objected, they'd say no standing, and then you'd have a good argument. But you didn't try to get Greenberg to change his mind.
Well, Your Honor,
clinging to this decision by the inferior tribunal.
Your Honor, first of all, the JAB is not an inferior tribunal. It's a separate arbitration proceeding. And secondly, Judge,
It is inferior because it's the national plan that decides whether a dispute is within the jurisdiction of the JAB or the JCB. So for that judgment, that decision, the national plan is the Supreme Court.
No, Your Honor, I think the fact that Roughneck took this to the national plan and tried to make a national plan case out of it does not, in fact, make it a national plan case. Again,
and
I ask the court to refer
then,
to...
Then challenge the national plan. Say to Greenberg... You shouldn't have decided this case.
In Your Honor, there, of course, is the rub. I mean, this is a proceeding that's obtained to which the funds were not a party, under a contract to which the funds were not a party. The funds are not a party to the arbitration award. I know of...
So what option did the national plan give you? You said you can't change it. So what option did you have?
Well, I don't think the national plan award controls the joint arbitration board proceeding, Your Honor.
And if you're wrong on that, what option would you have? You know, where could you go to get relief? If you're saying you don't have standing before the national plan, what are your other options?
It's a difficult question, Judge, because the funds are not parties to the national plan agreement. And so to say, you know, there's an appellate procedure and then they could have taken it to another level of the national plan is inaccurate, Your Honor, because the funds are not party to that plan. They're not party to that procedure. And therefore, you have a decision here purporting to affect an arbitration to which the funds are a party. And the decision is addressed against two entities that are not parties to the Joint Arbitration Board decision.
But apparently, Greenberg sent his decision to the funds. So he must have thought they were interested parties.
That may be, Your Honor. That certainly doesn't bind the Joint Arbitration Board, nor does it provide that the funds knew of the decision at the time that the arbitration proceeded.
Can I just ask this, because I think it's a little unclear. Were faxes sent by Greenberg to the funds? I know JAB didn't get it, but you said you weren't aware of any faxes that went out to the funds or to anybody else?
There was communication. There were faxes of the letter prior to the arbitration, Your Honor.
I'm talking about that July 21st.
You're talking about, yes, Judge.
Yeah, and that was supposed
You're
to be the
after
fax.
After the Greenberg arbitration.
Right, and you said there were some things that came a few days later. But I thought your opponent said something came out the night before, the day before, wasn't really clear in terms of the time that faxes were sent to the fund.
I don't have anything of that in my file, Your Honor. As I said, I know that the Roughneck was relying on this. Whenever they make that statement in their complaint, they're relying on the Greenberg decision. When you look at the Greenberg decision, there's nothing in the Greenberg decision that shows that it was, in fact, sent to anyone.
They allege in their complaint.
They do.
Well, don't we accept it at this stage as truthful?
No, Your Honor, because
there been an evidentiary hearing?
They rely on the exhibit attached.
Been an evidentiary hearing on this issue of what kind of notice was provided?
No, there has not, Judge.
Then why don't we accept the allegations of the complaint?
Because the exhibit itself...
Look, that's the rule. The rule is you accept the allegations of the complaint unless, you know, there can be internal contradictions or documents attached or what have you. Is that what you're saying, that somehow this allegation is refuted by something else in the complaint?
I'm saying that the exhibit controls, Your Honor.
The exhibit? What's the exhibit?
The exhibit on which they're relying is the Greenberg decision. There's nothing.
They make an allegation that it was communicated. Now, that allegation, don't we have to accept that?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
I don't understand you. What is it to falsify the allegation?
Again, Your Honor, the only thing I can tell you, Judge, is that the allegation is based on the exhibit. The exhibit shows nothing of the fact.
The allegation is separate from the exhibit. The allegation isn't that the exhibit recites that it was communicated to someone. It says this exhibit, this Greenberg decision was sent to X, Y, or Z.
Well, the only thing I can say, Your Honor, is that Roughneck contradicts itself, because if you look at Exhibit I, to the complaint in 7047, there is, in fact, a letter from the administrator to the Joint Arbitration Board stating, it's my understanding the Joint Arbitration Board did not have this award at the time it proceeded.
That's your understanding?
No, that's the statement in the letter from the administrator of the National Plan, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Lozman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sarver, anything further? What, there are more lawyers?
Two more.
Do you have anything separate to say, or what?
Just one thing, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Julian Schreiber on behalf of Local 130. I want to go back to that exhibit, the July 16th letter. It does not on its face, in my view, give the JAB notice that there's any challenge to its authority. What the letter says on page 4 is that Roughneck wants the plan administrator to direct Local 130 to withdraw its grievance to the JAB and cancel the JAB hearing. Now, Local 130 never filed a grievance with the JAB. The funds may have, as did Roughneck. But wanting a grievance to withdraw a grievance is a far cry from challenging the arbitrator's authority to resolve that grievance. It's quite different. Roughneck misstates that letter 3 times in its reply brief. On page 16, paragraph 1, page 18, paragraph 1, page 20, paragraph 2, they say they wanted the national plan to cancel the JAB hearing. That's not what the letter says. They wanted the national plan, as I said, to direct Local 130 to withdraw a grievance, which it hadn't filed, and to cancel the hearing. Now, the letter also talks about a jurisdictional dispute, but that's the very grievance that Roughneck submitted to the JAB. The trade jurisdictional issue was submitted to the JAB by Roughneck, relying on its collective bargaining agreement. That's docket 1, the complaint 5990, exhibit O, and paragraphs 55 and 56. The only other point I want to make is that if Roughneck is barred from asking a court to vacate the JAB decision because they voluntarily submitted the issue to the JAB, then they cannot be allowed to enforce the Greenberg decision, because enforcing the Greenberg decision by Roughneck's own acknowledgement would require vacating the JAB decision. That's Roughneck's reply brief, page 11, paragraph 1, and also paragraph 38 in the amended complaint in 7047. That's really all I have to add.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Keller. Mr. Schreiber. Mr. Kelleher?
Thank you, Your Honors. Christopher Kelleher on behalf of the Plumbing Contractors Association. Your Honors, developments since the briefing have prompted the association to reverse course. In our brief, we argued that the JEB award should be upheld, and we are now asking that the JEB award be reconsidered. I recognize this is highly unusual and apologize for any confusion. However, developments that have transpired essentially yesterday have required that I ask that the JEB award be reconsidered. Specifically, I have a letter dated yesterday, which incidentally I received yesterday, outlining the reversal in our position. And while the court, I know, frowns upon supplementing the record on appeal, I would offer, if the court would like, to supplement the record with this letter.
That's fine.
Thank you.
That's fine.
Have you let other counsel see the letter?
I did let co-counsel know, and I do believe Mr. Sarver was aware of our position. And I won't delve in too much detail into the reversal, but essentially, and it's outlined in the letter. The letter's very brief. Our position has changed essentially because the JEB received, we believe that the JEB received only certain pieces of information, that there were two audits, and the JEB was only given one of those audits, the audit which essentially found that Roughneck owed $2 million. Apparently, there was a second audit which said that that Roughneck only owed approximately $70,000. So essentially, the JEB only had certain information before it. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the sum
and
of
it. And I take it, since this just developed, you haven't had an opportunity to discuss this issue with all counsel to see if perhaps this matter might be resolved short of an opinion from this court, since we're now talking about $70,000.
Right. I have not, Your Honors. I did discuss with co-counsel. I made them aware of the situation, but we've not actually sat down and discussed the issue.
And do you have copies of that letter for us today?
I have
copies.
Yeah, I can. I have one letter, but I can make copies if the court permits.
Good. Yeah, I think so. I think we have a copying machine right here in the clerk's office.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we're happy to have your letter, and of course, the counsel can submit a response to the letter. That would be fine.
All right. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Sarver, do you have anything further? The time expired. We'll give you a minute.
Just two quick points, Your Honor. Number one, with respect to the fund's submission that they are not a party to the national plan, they are not a stipulated party. However, in this instance, the fund submitted a letter to the UA, who in turn provided it to the administrator of the national plan, who in turn gave it to the arbitrator, Arbitrator Greenberg, to consider in his decision. And in fact, Arbitrator Greenberg's decision quotes from the fund's letter when he's delineating the issue between the audit dispute and the jurisdictional dispute. So to suggest that they had absolutely no participation in this proceeding, I think, is somewhat misleading. The only other point I want to make is, as I think the fund's counsel identified a number of factual issues, again, I think the burden that the district court has put upon the appellant here is not to plausibly state a claim, but to prove its case in its entirety in the complaint. And that just goes far beyond even, you know, Iqbal and Twombly. And I think that's in essence what Roughneck, as a result of this decision, has been required to do. And I think that's very problematic.
Do you have any comment on Mr. Kelleher's bombshell?
I learned about it late last evening, so at this point, Your Honor, no, I do not.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to all counsel for
thank you.
Very interesting arguments.